The middle thing. Oh, now it's recorded. Solid red.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we're on Mishnah Vav, Aseh Lecha Rav. We just did the Rambam, where the Rambam says that you should make a person, even if he's lower than you, make him to your Rebbe. So we asked, well, is he teaching you or is he not teaching you? If he's not teaching you, what good is it? And if he's teaching you, so then he is Roy to be your Rav. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
I don't know if it's about intelligence.
Okay.
I could just say about the person itself. He might be, he might have less knowledge than you, but he might be able to teach you more than you could ever expect in terms of, you know, who he is and what he has to offer. He might not just be completely straight out intelligence. It could be, like, a lot of different things, who he is as a character, too.
Okay. That's true.
But what are you imagining then?
I'm sorry?
That's
what are you imagining?
Question
so
is,
what are you, what's that?
But then what are you imagining?
What are you imagining?
Yeah.
Right. Now, as Jake is saying, he may have less knowledge than you, but he's still, in certain areas, perhaps he could teach you something.
So
right?
But then that's real. That's a real thing.
Then
that's
that is a real thing.
Yeah.
That's right, exactly. Then that's a real thing. In that area, he knows more than you, or he has something to offer that will that is better than what you have. So in that area, he's your Roy.
He is Roy.
He is Roy. In that area, he is Roy. Right. So what does that mean? In that case, he would be Roy. And what does the Rambam say? You have to imagine that he's right.
So maybe in terms of that one character trait, where I mean, I guess you can. It's an idea of taking, I guess, certain aspects of his character,
okay.
And I guess the other one somehow you would have to, I guess, to order for you, if you to actually feel like you're, that it is your Rebbe, for you to be able to learn from those character traits while overlooking the others. I guess he's saying that's what he means by imagining, in
okay.
terms of like by the those other character traits. I guess you'll have to fill them in with your imagination.
Okay. So now, what you're saying is that a person has a picture in his mind of somebody greater than him. That is the person that he can learn from.
Right.
You see, and this person doesn't fit the bill because this person generally may know less than him. Right. However. But even though he generally may know less, or he may not be as perfected, right? That doesn't mean that in a particular area he may have something very valuable, a thought which you don't have that is very valuable, that if you would listen to him, you'd gain a tremendous amount of knowledge, right? But what happens is a person can't do that because a person. In other words, when a person has an image of a person that he is not, that generally he's not as knowledgeable, you see, so then he's not open to what the other person has to say, okay? And if he were open, he would see that man, perhaps this question or this statement that this person is saying is actually a very tremendous insight that he would gain tremendous knowledge from. But he's blocked from that knowledge because he can't view this person, he can't subordinate himself to this person and say, one second, this man may have something very intelligent to say. Yeah.
Is this something, though, that is supposed to be, are we supposed to be discriminant about who we pick as a Rebbe then? Or is it saying we can really learn from everybody? Is that really what it's saying? Like, because it seems like you really could imagine anything then. With it, you could take anybody.
You could take any person. That is right. That's what the Rambam's saying. That you could really take any person and sit him down and say, ask him a question or present him with an issue and let the man talk. And let's hear what he has to say. And what he's saying is that very often the man could have a tremendous insight. He may not be an educated person, generally, but that doesn't mean anything. He could have a tremendous insight that you won't have. You have all the knowledge in the area. This man, in this instance, may have a tremendous insight that there's no way you're going to get. That's what the Rambam is saying.
Isn't there another Mishnah that says that idea more explicitly, more normally, that you should listen to anybody who...
Could be.
Two Mishnahs that are saying exactly the same thing, one in an explicit way and one in a vague way?
I don't know. I guess we'll have to compare the Mishnahs. Okay? But that is what the Rambam is saying. The Rambam is saying that you could take a person that really doesn't have the level of knowledge that you have, and yet he could introduce a question or an insight that will give you tremendous knowledge. Okay? And most people will not avail themselves of this, because they'll say, they shut themselves up to that type of situation. Okay? But what does this really, there's something broader that this teaches you. You see, the reason why this is true is because what the Rambam's saying is that the way a person should learn really is he has to think freely. You see, most people, when they study an area, they're not free with their thoughts. They have a certain idea of what the answer should be, or how I should learn. I have to, you know, sit and learn and, let's say, read this mefarish and then read this mefarish, and they have a set regimen of how learning's supposed to be. You see? And the Rambam holds, really, the way learning is supposed to be, it is supposed to be a totally free process, a totally free adventure. Which means to say, when you sit down to examine or to understand something, there should be no preconceived notion. You see, you shouldn't really have to resort to any previous knowledge that you have or any kind of preconceived idea of let's say, for instance, you're learning a sugya, right? And you sit down and you're in the middle, let's say, of Shabbos, right? And you go, let's say we go to the next malacha, right? And then we start thinking about the malacha, think about a question, okay? Now, what happens very often is a person feels he wants to be secure. So he doesn't want to be faced with a totally unknown thing or something that totally baffles him. So he immediately draws on things, on other ideas that he had, let's say in the last shiur or in the last blot, you see. But he does not want to open this blot and start thinking about it as if he knows nothing, you see. Because a person wants a security that he's going to get the answer. But the Rambam's saying, really the way a person should approach a problem and think is every problem is a totally new thing. Let's examine this as if we know nothing. Let's say, what would I say if I didn't have a Gemara, if I didn't have Rashi, if I didn't have Tosfos? What would I say, okay, if I saw this Gemara? That's really the way a person should approach thought, with a totally free mind. Okay? And if there are things that are limiting his mind, if there's notions that he feels he has to conform with, you see, it prevents him from coming to the true answer. You see? And that's really what the Rambam's saying over here. That the reason why a person, let's say, is learning, and somebody else who has less knowledge comes and asks him a question or offers an answer, very often the person's impatient, like, ah, come on, it's a basic. He doesn't want to bother with it. You see, because he has already a certain regimen of what he wants to accomplish, you see. But the truth of the matter is, a lot of times a person comes and he's asking a question, and it might be a very basic question, a very simple point, but go try to explain it to him. Yeah, somehow you find, not so easy. This is a simple question, but go try to explain this simple idea in a way that he understands. Not always so simple. Why? Because you already have a notion of what malacha is, let's say. You know what malacha is. I know it's 39 malachas. Guy comes and says, well, what's the idea behind malacha? What is it? Joe, go try to explain that. Not so simple, you see. So what happens is a person overlooks the simplistic and tries to move on. He always wants to move on, build up in his knowledge. Okay? And he very often overlooks something that's simplistic, and a simplistic thing very often could explain the whole sugya. But you don't see it because you're beyond the simplistic. Now, very often, a guy who has less knowledge than you, he's not beyond the simplistic. There's very basic points that he doesn't understand, that he needs to be explained. You see? So a person like that very often is very good to show you're overlooking a simple point. You see? That's what the Rebbe is saying, really. It's not just make a person less than you into your Rav. What it's saying is that when you approach an area, don't approach an area as if you're a knowledgeable person. You see? Because if you do that, you're blocking off certain answers and certain possibilities that you feel you progressed beyond. You see? But really, when you approach an area, it should be as if you don't really know anything. You just want to understand it as a simpleton. You see? And that's what the Rambam is giving you, is sort of a method that could get you into that frame of mind. And that's the best frame of mind, really, to pursue knowledge. You see, a totally free frame of mind where any question is fair game and we're just looking at it without any kind of preconceived notion. Okay? And this is a method to accomplish that frame of mind. Okay? And that's why the Rambam says you can gain a lot of knowledge from that. Okay? And you see, that's why really, when you think of it, Chazal say that I learned a lot from my Rebbe, I learned more from my Chaver, and I learned the most from my students. But what does that mean when you say you learned the most from your students? I mean, isn't that saying, in a sense, the student is really teaching you? The student really is your Rebbe. Because you can learn, you only learn from, when you learn from a person, that means that person supplied you in some way with knowledge that you couldn't have. You see? So that's really what the Rambam is saying. That what happens is, when you learn with a chaver, you're learning on a certain level, but you may be skipping the basics, because the chaver is not asking you the basics. But when you have to teach a person that knows less, what happens is that person is questioning basic premises that you may not have really understood. And without those premises, your knowledge is very limited. Once you get those premises and you can explain it in a very simplistic way, then you really can understand it. Okay? So that's what it's saying. That's why the Talmud really gives the Rebbe the greatest knowledge. Because the greatest knowledge is always the most simplistic. That's always the greatest knowledge. That's why whenever you hear something, you say, wow, that's a simple idea. You say, you go, wow, that's unbelievable. Now, it should be the opposite. You should say, oh, that's a whole complicated thing. You see, very complicated, but it doesn't really make the impact. What makes the impact is the simplistic. Okay? So the simplistic is really where the knowledge is. And that's what the Rambam said. That's the knowledge a person should go after, the simplistic ideas, and not the ideas that make you feel like you've achieved something. Those ideas, forget it. Okay? Is that a simple idea?
Wow.
Right? But that's really, that's the mistake a lot of people make, that they're looking for something that a big Dvar Torah, complicated, unbelievable svara, Dvar Torah, that they could tell over. Very nice to tell over at the table, but if you want to really get knowledge, that's not the area. Okay? That's it. So that's it. That's all I have to say. Simple.
Do you think it's just, I mean, is yes. It like immediately impossible? I mean, for you to just try to encounter the simple foundation of stuff before you go to the higher stuff? Or you think it just be, I mean, it's like an ego thing?
Why a person doesn't...
would miss that, like, simple level. You're saying that it has to come from, like a student almost, somebody...
Because the thing is, it's a process that's, when you get the thing, it's very enjoyable. But the thing is, what it demands is looking for the simplistic goes against the person's grain, because he has to feel like he knows nothing. I mean, right? In other words, you encounter a problem and you go, okay, well, let's just start from scratch. You see? And let's understand the most basic. You see, that goes against a certain part of a person's nature, because a person wants to make progress. And the simplistic, even though it is great progress, it looks like, to the emotions, it looks like you got nowhere. Now, what did you say? You said that? I mean, that's pretty obvious. A lot of times you're stating the obvious. You see, so emotionally you don't feel that you accomplished anything. You see, but actually once you state the obvious, you see, hey, that is something I sensed, but I never really fully pinpointed it. You see, and that move gives the person tremendous knowledge. You see, and really, in all of the great discoveries, it's always a simplistic point. It's not the complex, complicated stuff. It's the simplistic. You see, like, I can give you an example in psychology. You see, Sigmund Freud, he studied people's illness, and he came up with certain ideas that actually turned out to be very simple and closer to the conception of the average person. You see, so, like, for instance, one idea that comes to mind is when he studied dreams, okay, he went into what the meaning of dreams is, and he tried to unravel what dreams are, okay? And he came to the conclusion that all dreams have to do with wishes, with fantasies that a person has during the day that are unfulfilled, okay? And really are things that he's fulfilling at night in his dreams, you see? Now that idea really is almost, when you think of it, it's almost obvious. It's almost like very simplistic. You would think, it's very close to what an uneducated layman would think of a dream. In fact, when you look at common language, the term dream is used really synonymously with something that I, my greatest fantasy, a wish, you see? So even the term dream has to do with when a person just thinks on the surface, he thinks a person's aspirations, a person's fantasies, you see? So why do you need a great scientist to discover this, that dreams have to do with unfulfilled wishes? Why do you need that? I mean, you could say, ask the average guy in the street, what's a dream about? Guy might offer this. This is a pretty simple explanation. But the answer is, because the science, when I say scientists, I mean the average guy, the average scientist, not a real chacham, but when a scientist looks at something, he wants to believe, he wants to make it into something complex and complicated, and something that is not just a basic, ordinary concept, but something that demands great study, you see? So what they came up with was all kinds of complicated formulations of what a dream is, how it works in the mind, where it comes from, and many of them said a dream means nothing, it's simply an overload of the mind, and they had all kinds of, you know, all kinds of various theories. And it turned out that the theory that was true was really the one that was the most simplistic, and the one that had the scientists sat down anybody from the street and said, hey, you be our Rebbe, what do you think? What is your notion of a dream? He may have led them on the right track. You see? But that's because the simplest idea is usually closer to what the truth is. You see, the simpler the idea is. So that's why, even though an average guy may not be able to prove it or show why it is, but he's telling you something that appears to his mind on the surface to make sense. That very often has tremendous value. You see? And that's the thing. And therefore, when a person thinks, when a person tries to understand ideas, he should always use that part of the mind. The part of the mind that's looking for the simplistic and for the easiest way to understand something. If you look for the easiest way to understand something, usually you're on the right track. I say. But most people don't like that because they want to think that they're accomplishing something. And when you do something easy, you didn't accomplish anything. What did you do? You just sat down and said, let's just think, what's the first thing that comes to my mind? Let's just think what would be the easiest way of explaining this? And you come up with a simple explanation. Wow, I mean, this is the whole Tosfos and the Ron and the Riff. I mean, what do you mean? This has to be, he's saying so much, there's so many words here, it's got to be easier, it's got to be more difficult than that. It can't just be that. You see? But the answer is, that is usually closer to the truth than something that's not simplistic and not easy. You could be sure you're on the wrong track. Okay, so that's why this works. That's really why this works. Because if it were the reverse, this would never work. You could never say, pick a guy that's lower than you and see what comes to his mind, see what he tells you. That would be crazy. If theories and knowledge is something so complex and so complicated and so astute, this would be a crazy method. You see? But that's what the Rambam is teaching you. That don't follow your emotions when it comes to thought. Don't try to be ambitious and figure out things that will dazzle people. Just try to understand the thing in the simplest and easiest way. Try to explain it in a way that a person would look at you and say, oh, that's obvious. Then you know you're on the right track. And if a person looks at you and has trouble understanding what you're saying, and now you feel like, oh, I'm a really big intellectual, you know you're probably full of it. Right? That's the thing. Yeah.
But I feel like, at least today, it's important for some people, in order for them to like dignify even what they say, they need that aspect. They need to have something that's like a little bit more complex, I guess.
You mean a person that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So they want to have a certain
right. I mean, it's on a different, like, I guess, line, but like the way the Rav wrote, you know, the way Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote,
right,
was like, he wrote like using very, you know, very profound, very and a very high vocabulary, and
right.
Usually people say that was used to like dignify a lot of his work.
The thing is, it's an interesting thing, because if you listen to the Rav's shiurim, well, somebody sent me once a thing of like 100 of his shiurim, you know, that they have on the internet, and if you listen to those shiurim, you'd be shocked how simplistic it is. He asks, let's say he asks a question that sounds, wow, how are you going to answer that? 5 different contradictions. And then the answer, when you hear the answer, you go, oh, that's not really like what, you know, it's almost obvious. The answer is always so simplistic that you feel like, this doesn't sound like such a great, complicated genius. This is just a very simplistic thing. Now, it could be he uses fancy words, okay? But the idea that he's saying is very clear and simplistic, and there's nothing complicated about it at all. And when you get finished, you really could usually sum a shear up like that in a sentence or two. Okay? So that's really, I mean, the Rav really follows that directly. Now, it may be a very long shear, and you may not get to the point where he's simplistic, okay? But sometimes he's working something out, and during the shear, and therefore it may be complicated because he doesn't have the svar yet. He's trying to get to the simplistic, okay? But always when he ends up, the shear is always like one line. And you can always look back and think, wow, what took so long for that? Okay, but the answer is, yes, it's very simple, but not so easy to get this simplistic. Okay, because there's a lot of things going on that the person has to coordinate, and not so easy to get there. So he's not saying, you know, the Rambam's not saying just get a guy to teach you and now he's going to give you all the answers. It's not what it means. If the man doesn't have as much knowledge as you, it doesn't mean that he's going to be able to just produce the answer like that. But it means he's going to lead you in a simplistic direction. And that's the direction you want to go. Okay? Okay. So, let's see what else we got here. Fighter? Okay.
20 minutes.
Okay. So, right, next Rambam. Rambam says like this. Kenei lecha chaver. That a person should acquire a chaver. Okay? So the Rambam says, Zachar oso bilshon kenia. Okay, so he's saying again. He's saying the Perkei Avos doesn't say to make a friend or to befriend somebody. It says to acquire, to buy a friend. Okay? V'lo amar aseh lecha chaver. Oh, hischaver l'acheren. Become friendly with others. But it says actually to be koneh, to acquire a friend. He says, hakavana bazeh shetzarech la'adam sheyikne ohev la'atzmo. A person should actually acquire a friend for himself. Sheyitaknu bo maisa v'chol inyonov. That he should help him to perfect his actions and all of his dealings. Okay, kamosha amru o chavrusa o misusa. The Gemara says, if a person either needs a friend or he needs death. In other words, life, in order for a person to live properly, he must have a friend. It's an amazing thing. Why? We'll have to see. But the Gemara is actually saying that in order for a person to live a life that is worth living, he must have a friend. And if he can't, he doesn't have a friend, his life is severely compromised. Okay? Then the Rambam says, v'im lo yimtza'ehu, if you can't find a friend, tzarech lihishtado bo b'chol libo. He must try with all his heart. V'afilu im yitztarech, litein lo mamon. Even if you have to give the person money, k'dei shimshechenu li'avaso. In order for the person to like you, you must pay him off to be your friend. Ad sheyashuv ohev, until he likes you. V'lo yaser mehi mashek tamid acharatzono. Don't stop running after him. Ad shetischazek ahavaso, until he likes you. Okay. He says, I mean, the question is, I mean, that's not the normal way to make a friend. In other words, that doesn't sound like you would want a friend like that. Like the person has no interest in you, does not want to be your friend, but you just pay him every week to be your friend. I mean, I don't know. Is that good advice? In other words, you take a guy, guy's not interested in you at all, it does not, has no interest in associating with you. He's in a mind. You know, he's in, what do you call it? Antagonizes you. You say, look, I'll pay you $100 every week, just be my friend. I mean, that sounds pretty
like a bad deal, yeah.
Bad deal, pitiful, not a good idea. Do you really want this person as your friend?
Yeah. Oh, but what's the Rambam calling a friend? Somebody that helps you perfect your midos. Somebody what do you say? Sheyitaknu bo maisav v'chol inyano.
Yes.
Like somebody that'll, like his definition of friend is just somebody that will provide you with those services.
Okay.
And those qualities are so important to have and to work on that even at the cost of having to pay somebody.
Okay, good. So what you're saying is that the Rambam's saying it is worth it to pay a person in order to have that person be with me to help me to make sure that I do the right things and to help me improve my nature. Okay? I agree that is worth it to pay a person to do that. But I would call the person an assistant, a companion, somebody you pay. I wouldn't exactly call that person an ohave, somebody that loves me, a friend, a lover, well, literally a lover, but he means a friend, person that we're friends. I would call that person a companion, somebody that's going to help me. Yeah.
He says
until the person, yes.
So, that's an important thing.
Until he likes you.
Right.
That's right. So you see, it's not, it would make sense, pay a guy just to watch over you, be your shaman, fine. But he's saying until he likes you, meaning what you're looking for really is friendship, real friendship. Okay?
Maybe it's more of like, at first, you could say that you're paying this guy, right? Because you don't have friends. You're paying this guy to what Gil was talking about with meals and everything, but also to become your friend. And then as time goes on, the guy starts to realize that this guy who's paying him is actually a cool guy, and like you actually start creating a friendship. That's what he's probably saying by saying Aja.
Right.
Right.
Okay, that's right. So he is saying, really, you have to create a friendship. Right? What's that?
It's worth it. I mean, it's worth it for that overzealous, I guess, even that loyalty. I mean, that's what friendship is. You have to be willing to do that. I mean, I think that's important in terms of maintaining a relationship also. You have to invest in it.
That's right. And so he is saying that you must create a friendship, right? But that's a different that's a different concept than we have of a friend, because our concept of a friend, creating a friend, is tied to dasasri, is a contradiction to our concept of friend. Our concept of a friend is something you don't have to create. It's a friendship. It's a natural bonding of two people. Creating a friend, the average person would look at that as being something definitely, totally opposed to the concept of friendship. It would be something that would be so far removed, the person would say, that's how I'm going to get a friend to create a friend? What kind of a friendship is that? Do you know what I mean? But the Rambam's saying, no, that you actually must create if you want a friend, really you have to create a friend. Okay. Which means if you have to spend money, it doesn't matter. You must create a friend. Okay? What's the point? Why is that something that the average person really thinks is a totally crazy and nonsensical idea? Creating a friend. You look at a person, that's pitiful. I mean, even if they ended up as friends, you look at the person like, you so hard up, you have to, you know, fine, you got a friend this way. But, I mean, what kind of a friend is he really? I mean, that he had to become your friend through this devious method? I mean, to really run after the guy and at all costs subjugate yourself and act totally right, do anything for the guy, and the guy's not interested in you until he finally becomes your friend. I mean, why the average person would think that that is totally nonsensical and not friendship. Yeah.
Like a big thing now is like to be like unconditional, like an unconditional love.
That's right. Unconditional love. This is unconditional love. I mean,
this is
the exact
big
opposite.
Condition, yeah.
Big condition. Okay, now you're his friend. Yeah. Oh, now he's his friend. Of course, the guy wouldn't leave you alone. So, whatever. But is that real friendship? I mean, you'd say that's not unconditional love. That's conditional. It's something you forced that could now come apart probably easy.
Huh.
right? You'd say, I wouldn't even want to create a friendship in this way because it would be such a tenuous friendship. How do I know? The guy the next day could say, I had enough of you. It's not a natural union of two people. There's no natural attraction. It's something out of force. What kind of a thing is that? I mean, if you end up being friends, it's not something that a person really feels that as a friend. You know, like when you get that feeling, that guy's a friend. He's a real friend. I mean, look what I had to go through to get the guy to be my friend.
Hello, Luke?
Yes.
So I was thinking maybe like you mentioning that like a person nowadays, if you saw that something like that, he'd be like shocked and saying like, that's what you call a friend, like.
Right.
So maybe I was thinking that like what the colloquial perception of a friend is really, maybe what the wrong thing is, he's thinking what in truth is really what a friend is, like 99% of the time, and he's just taking it to its logical extent. In other words, like, we have this perception, we have this fantasy that, like, our friends are really interested in us because of our, you know, our amazing nature and the chachma that we have, you know, but in reality, probably most of the time, we have our friends because we share an identification, because he has something in common with me, and the fact that I do something that he does grants significance to his own existence, you know?
Right.
So maybe what I'm saying is that there is a true idea of friendship, and that is, in terms of being acquiring the Tov, like he said, like, that I think he mentioned that, I don't have it in front of me, but he said that it's like in pursuing Tov. Right, so that's a true benefit of friendship, but that's not going to happen automatically, or that usually doesn't happen automatically. And the thing is that if you see someone that can help you in pursuing the souls, then you should use any of those identification methods, including mama, including presents and money and anything like that, because that, at the end of the day, even though that might not be socially acceptable, that's what's going to allow you to actually create a friendship with the guy.
Right, okay, very good, very good. That's right. That's right. In other words, well, that's what the Rambam's saying. The Rambam's saying that what people look at as a friendship, identification, and things in common, and traits of his that I can bond with. You see, the Rambam's saying that really is not the true person. You're not really a friend with the... It's based on a false value. You see, the Rambam's saying the value that a person should have, he should not consider those things important. In other words, if I have, let's say, a person that has a certain quirk, right? He likes to be given presents. Whatever, he likes somebody to spend money on him, or he has certain emotions that go against my grain. The guy's what do you call it, too jokey for me, or the guy is too stingy, or the person has another trait, he's short tempered. Whatever it is, though, you see, a person establishes friendships based on those things. I can get along with this guy. Naturally, I feel close to the guy. Why? I have these great qualities. I'm like a cool guy. And this guy's a cool guy. Oh, we're really friends. You see, that is based on valuing a person for certain just superficial emotions. You see, this guy's not a cool guy. I mean, he's a geek. I can't be his friend. This type of friendship is based on the outer layer of a person, his emotions. The Rambam's saying that should be nothing. That shouldn't bother you. You should want the person as a friend for his true internal value. And if I have to put up, run after the guy and put up with his nonsense because the guy has crazy emotions, you see, and I have to put up with all kinds of nonsense, even spend money on the guy, so what? That's an emotion. That's not his essence. You see? The Rambam is saying that when you establish a friendship, it should be because of who the person really is, his internal nature. That the person, does he recognize the good? You see, if he recognizes the good, if he has a recognition of the good, he recognizes the chachma as the good, what do you care if the guy's a cheap guy, or if the guy's has another defect, emotional defect? That's not the essence. You see? So you should run after the guy and cater to his crazy emotions, because this guy essentially has a good quality. You see, his essence, he recognizes the good. And he should do the same for you. And if you are going to, if you're going to be attached to the man's emotional temperament, the particular emotions that he has, things that annoy you or make you happy, that's not a friend. That is not a person that you want. That's not a real friendship. That's not really a way to establish a friendship. The way the average person thinks, that's not the way to establish a friendship. Because what happens is, when that emotion changes, that's it. He's not your friend anymore. That's why you find people that they were friends all their lives, all of a sudden, not friends. What happened? Those guys, what happened to them? It's just an emotion. Yeah.
But this is also, you're saying, is that it's also showing qualifying factors of being a good friend. Meaning that it's not just saying that you should go to that means to get a friend, but this is what, like, I'm saying that chaver should look for this in, like, another friend.
That's right, exactly.
Right.
He should look for a person that has the true value system. If the person has the true value system, he should not be influenced at all by the superficial emotions that a person has. That I don't like the guy because of this and this and this. Unless the man is an evil man, then obviously you don't like him because you're not going to draw close to him because he's set on an evil path. That's a different thing. Okay, but short of that, if a person's not set on an evil path, and it's somebody that you can relate to in terms of the true value system. Okay, even if he doesn't have the true value system now, but if it is somebody that you can relate to in the true value system, you can show him ideas, you see, then his, whatever his particular emotional makeup is irrelevant. Should not matter. You should pursue that guy, and even if emotionally you can't, you're not close to the guy, but what will happen is you could become close to the guy. You could become close, because those emotions, once you become close to the guy's true nature, you see, then those emotions won't affect you. That's what he's saying. Then those emotional things, you'll be able to see through it. That's why a lot of times you say, hey, how could you like this guy? That doesn't bother me. See, it bothered me to begin with, but now it doesn't bother me. You see, because if a person has the real, has a relationship with the real person, then the other thing he sees, those things are superficial. I don't care. So I spend money on the guy. So he's takes advantage of me. Who cares? You know what I mean? A lot of times you find guy goes, he takes advantage of me. The one guy takes advantage of me. Oh, that is horrible. Oh, I can't stand this guy. He's horrible. Another guy. All of a sudden you could forgive the guy. Yeah. So he's a little bit takes advantage of me. So what? You know what I mean? Like. Why? What's the difference? What's the difference? What's the difference? This guy you couldn't stand. He looked at you sideways. You hate the guy. Because it's not those things. You know what I mean? If you have a real bond with the guy, these things are nothing. That's what I'm saying. It's superficial. A person that wants a natural relationship, you see, that's a superficial thing. It's just your own thing. He fits into your own framework, your own emotional framework right now. He fits in. Oh, he's my greatest friend. You change your emotional framework? Who is the guy? I don't even know the guy. You know what I mean? That's not, friendship shouldn't be based on your emotional framework. It should be based on the important thing, the value, the real value of a person.
Okay.
The real value of a person,
yeah,
is his love of truth.
Mm-hmm.
His desire for knowledge.
Right.
Desire for truth and the love of truth. That's the real valuable person. That person wants to live in a way that is in line with the true reality. See, like a person wants to live in line with his nature. His nature is that he has an intelligence, that he could understand God's reality, and he could be part of that reality. That's the true value of a person. And the other parts of him that want to distort reality and want to gain certain things that don't exist, that's not the true part of a person. And as the part of a person that, let's say, for instance, wants to be immortal, a person wants to be immortal, he wants to exist forever. Okay, so he'll do certain actions that don't make sense. Right? Like the Rambam says, that a person will build a house that could live 1,000 years, that could exist 1,000 years, and he's only going to live 60 more years. So why would a person do that? Okay, so it's based on a part of him that wants to change reality, wants to change the way things are. Okay, that is not the true value of a person. That's something that's a part of the person that he has to correct. He has to say, hey, 1 second, why am I wasting my time doing an action that has no purpose? Wouldn't I be better off doing actions that have a purpose, that serve a purpose? Yes. That part of a person that looks at himself and decides, 1 second, this is an action without purpose. This action really has true value. With this action, I can understand and I can pursue knowledge. I can gain something of true value. You see? That's the part of the person that has real value. Okay, so when a person learns an idea and he walks away with a new idea that is a real idea, that is real, okay, that he takes with him the rest of his life, that idea, he values that. Because that's an idea, a new idea that is true. I've discovered something true. You see, that's something that a person has tremendous value. That's really what a person places value. So that's the part of the person that you have to be the friends with. Okay.
You saying you need a guy like this to be sure that one of your friends is like this, or all friends must be like this, and if they're not like this, then
all people really have that. See. Any person has that in him. He has a desire to know reality, to know the way things are. A person has that, and he wants. No man walks around saying, "I want to be living in a dream world." Nobody. Every person wants to. If you tell a person, every person wants to know what is real, what really is reality. A person wants to know that. What's the true way of life? You see, every person wants to know that. So in every person is a desire for truth and a love of truth. If you tell a person a new idea, unless the person has an emotion, they'll go and you show them a simple idea, or you show them a Gemara that's you can't understand, okay? And you show them a simple explanation, he goes, wow. You see, he's very happy. You see, that happiness is because there's a part of him that wants to know reality, wants to know truth. You see, so every person has that. So that's why if you pursue a person, you see, and you pursue him for his true value, you can be his friend.
Meaning anybody?
Anybody. Any person. You can be any person's friend because every person has in him that element that is the true good and that desires the good. Desires the best way of life. Every single person has that, and every single person has within him a capacity to understand what is the best way of life.
Not everybody activates that, do you think?
They don't activate it. That's exactly right.
Is that
right.
Your job as should you be looking for more of a finished product, meaning somebody that already has that same?
The Rambam doesn't say that, but the only thing the Rambam says is.
He does say it, says because the whole point of Sheikh Noah, the last one of Sheikh, talking about myself,
that's the result of having a friend. That's right.
So So he's not going to help you in that way if he doesn't actualize his...
If he doesn't actualize it, you see, if when you interact with him, you see, you can't actualize that part of him. In other words, you can't get that person. See, that's the pursuit of the person. You run after the person. And why are you running after him? Because you want to get him to the point where he can get over his petty emotions. You see? What's that? It's a what?
It's a chesed project.
Well, it's for you too, because you need to have a friend. You see? So if this is the guy that's available, you see, what you're trying to do is, he's on a low level, which means he's just living in line with certain petty emotions. You see? But he has a part of him that's high. He has a part of him that, if you could get to that part, you'd say, oh, one second, I see, I'm living in line with petty emotions that are stupid, that are just harming me. But really, there is a real good, that I can have a very good life if I would go beyond these emotions and pursue something that's very enjoyable for man. Okay, the enjoyment of knowledge. Now, if you could get to that part of him, then you have a very good friend. If you can't get to that part of him, no matter what you do, that person is intent on sticking to his emotions and his emotional, prejudices, well, then you're not going to have that friend. But that's the pursuit. The pursuit is that he feels like he needs certain things. You see, and if you supply him with those things, very often the person becomes very now amenable to you. Now you have a path to form a relationship with the real person. You see, obviously, if the relationship is to go to baseball games and go out to eat all day, so then that's not what the Rambam's talking about. The Rambam's talking about having a friend that wants to join you in pursuit of knowledge and God's reality, the reality that God established, pursuing understanding that reality. Now, if that person, if the person wants to join you, so then you have a friend. If he wants to join you only in going to restaurants and baseball games, so then obviously that's not the goal. That type of friend is the surface friend, the emotional friend.
And what about a wife? Is this like a similar thing with a wife, or that's like a totally different?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
No, why would you say
that? I mean,
that's a good question.
I would assume.
She's a chaver.
That's a good question. Wife should be the same thing. Right? Wife should be the same thing. That the relationship with the wife is based on the person, the true values of the person. See? The fact that the husband and wife together are interested in living a life that's in line with the reality that God established.
Right.
That's right. So that, insofar as the person is involved in that, he is attached to the truth. What is the true reality that God established? So it's the exact same thing.
Does this allow for an emotional relationship, though, or does this not? Or does this say that's not something that should? That's like unhealthy to. Not necessarily. It shouldn't be the idea. It shouldn't be like the focus. But it's definitely something that's, I mean, naturally acted on. Like, meaning that there has to be something.
It is an emotional reaction. It is the strongest possible emotion.
Oh, you're saying it is?
Yeah, because you will really love that person because he personifies exactly what's the most important thing in reality. So you really will have a tremendous love for that person. It will be a stronger attachment than any other attachment.
I mean, the result of that would be...
Yeah, because let's say, for instance, you have a relationship with a person where you go to baseball games with them. Now, that's a very limited relationship because that's only one part of your nature, you see? So it doesn't take in the whole of your nature because there's another part of your nature that says, one second, is there any real value to the baseball game? No. So now there's a part of you that's really sort of not too participating in that, you see? So therefore, you're split, sort of. Right, when you go to the game, you have a great time, right? But there's a part of you that's unsatisfied because there's a part of the person that's looking for something true. And when that part of the person looks at the baseball game and goes, 1 second, what's this guy's throwing a ball and this guy's catching a ball? I mean, what does this have to do with anything really significant in life? Okay? So when you have a friend like that, that's a very limited friendship. Okay? But let's say your friendship is with a person that is, that values the same basic value as you. So then that means that your essence is really relating to his essence. Essentially, you have a friendship with that person because that's his very essence. You see, whereas the other guy, in a sense, you feel you don't even know him. You feel like you're not really his friend because the part of him that you're in contact with is a very minor part. It's his emotional drive at the moment. You know what I mean? But the real essence of the person, you don't even know. Like, that's why a lot of times you go, you find, I didn't even know this man. I didn't even know. Right? You have neighbors that the guy turns out he's crazy Meshuggah, right? They arrest him and the neighbors come out. He seemed like such a nice guy. We didn't even know he was this way. You see, yeah, you seem like such a nice guy because your interaction with him was in a peripheral part of his nature. But you had no real interaction with the person, with his essence. What really makes the man tick? That you have no interaction with. So that's not a real friend. That's a friend on a very superficial, right? Because friendship means where there's a joining. Now, if the joining is only insofar as something that's very superficial, so that's a superficial joining, right? Like if we're friends in work, so then that's a limited friendship because then I go home and I have my own life and you have your own life. We're divided. Right? But if we're friends in something more essential, so then on the contrary, when you go home and you have your life and you have my and I have my life, that's not really your life. Your life is really the essence, what you do. You know what I mean? So if I'm friends, like let's say for instance, the essence of a person's life would be business. So then going home at night is like really he looks at it as superficial, but his essence is the business. Then if I'm his business partner, I could be closer to him than anybody else. Because that's really what makes him tick.
So there is like a subjective.
So in that sense, it's subjective. That's right. You could have a subjective thing. Let's say the thing that really makes the guy tick is this thing, and I'm in with him. Then I'm really the closest to who he is. You see, I'm really friends with that part of him that makes him who he is. So I partake most of friendship.
Right. So are we saying necessarily that it has to do with like a Torah?
Well, because that's the thing. You see, the thing is, when you study man, you see, if you look at it just from a subjective framework, then anything could be his essence. But when you study man, you find, 1 second, okay, let's say his essence is desire for money. Okay, well, let's see. Is that his essence? Well, he has another part of him, which is a desire to know, to have knowledge. Now, is that part satisfied by the desire for money? No. Oh, so 1 second. So which part do we say is the main man? Which is man? Is it this thing or is it that thing? You see? Now, if you study man, you're going to find that his essence, the thing that differentiates him from anything else, is the desire for knowledge.
Right.
You see? But insofar as the other desires, let's say the desire for food, you're not going to say that's the essence of man because an animal has that. So that's not what makes him different. That's not what differentiates his essence, is not the desire for food. So you have to say, find the quality that makes him unique among everything else. That's where you find man.
How do you form a relationship based on that, though? That's the
knowledge?
Yeah.
Just the same way as you form a relationship based on food. Let's say, friends, you have a relationship where you go out to eat. So the relationship is you enjoy together this common enjoyment, right? Now let's say, but if you learn with a guy, you enjoy together the thing that is the most important thing in a person's life, and that is knowledge. The enjoyment of Chachma. You enjoy that with him, that's his essence.
Right. Just to share in knowledge with him, to partake in.
Well, it's like any other friendship. The friendship is always a partaking of some common thing. We partake in some good together. We join to run after a certain good.
So that's what we were saying in terms of money, is that all the other things, like in terms of food, like all the other things with food, we're using that as a route to get that knowledge.
Exactly.
So that's what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're using a good, money, let's say, food, whatever it is, there's a certain common good. You're using that good, but what's the real good? The real good is something beyond those goods. And I mean, now if we can join together for the real good, that which is really good for man, so then I have to be his friend. Because what's a friend? A friend is a person that helps me with the good. Right? That's what a person wants. A person wants the best life. That thing that will give him happiness. Right? Now if you have a man that is joining together with me to gain that thing that I'm looking for, well, that's a friend. The person that will help you, never harm you, and always be with you. That's a friend. Right? But that has to be that we have the good. We're looking for that which is really good. Because let's say we're friends to look for something that we think is good, but it's really bad. It's really bad. We're friends to rob banks. That is not going to be a friendship. Why? Because even though we think it's a good, but it's going to turn out it's a bad. And ultimately, we're going to find out, oh boy, that wasn't good. So then the whole friendship was, he was really harming me.
Right. So the point is to like hinge it on something substantial, something real.
That is real. That is a real good.
Right.
Then he is really my friend because he is really helping me with a real good. Not an imaginary good. So that's what they're going to say. Certain goods a person thinks are good, but they're not really good. They're just temporary goods. But there are other things that are real goods. And it's those goods where friendship lies. Alright? We do a little further because the Rambam quotes Aristotle, and he has a very good thing on this thing of friendship, what the true friend is and what a not true friend is.
Aristotle.
Yeah. So we can go into a little more, but it's the basic, that's the basic thing, that the friendship has to be based on a good. So what is the real good for a man? You know, what is the thing that gives a man a good life, that gives him happiness, and that he really values as a real good, not an imaginary. So knowledge is something the person, reality is something the person values as a real good.
Right.
Okay. Okay. I think he held it up right. Okay, Yehuda, are you there? Okay. So what do? I just press the one of these buttons here. Is this button?
It should be like that.
I think I got it. Call ended, yep.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Alrighty.
Hi.
Yeah. I guess I press.
Do that one.